Hello, everybody. This is Steve, and welcome to the Diecast Movie Podcast, where we do movie discussions where the genre of the movie is decided by the roll of a die, and we also do interviews. And today's episode, I'll be joined with Linda Miller, star of King Kong Escapes, and her and I are going to be discussing Godzilla, King of the Monsters from 1956. I think it's her first time seeing it, so I'm curious to hear her insights in watching the movie. If you want to meet Linda Miller, you can at Monster Bash this October 13th through the 15th, 2023 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And if you want to know more about Monster Bash, you can go back to my earlier episode where Ron Adams and I talk about Monster Bash. And we also have interviews with various people that are going to be attending, like Tony Isabella, Gregory Moffat, Zandor Vorkoff, Bob Fermanek, who did the restoration of the Robot Monster Blu-ray. So if you want to hear more about those people that are going to be there, check the earlier episodes. Also, we're going to play the Monster Bash promo, and I hope everybody enjoys it, and I hope to see you there soon.
Here comes Monster Bash to the Marriott Pittsburgh North this October 13th, 14th, and 15th. Guest movie and TV stars signing autographs, 150 vendor tables of cool, new, and vintage monster movie merchandise, toys, model kits, monster magazines, comics, DVDs, Blu-rays, VHS tapes, T-shirts, and so much more. Guest stars signing autographs include Greg Moffat from the low-budget classic Robot Monster, The Adventures of Superman, Science Fiction Theater, and more. Linda Miller, the star of King Kong Escapes, and featured in the cult classic film The Green Slime. Carl Craig, child star of the Gamera Japanese Giant Monster Fest, Destroy All Planets. Tony Isabella, iconic Marvel Comics writer and editor, known for Dracula Lives, Ghost Rider, The Amazing Spider-Man, Tales of the Zombie, and more. Xander Vorkov, star of Dracula vs. Frankenstein, will be bashing
the 1970s Dracula.
TV horror host favorites, Ohio TV legend Son of Ghoul, plus Drac and Countess Carita. Meet them all, see special events, talks, and shop wall-to-wall monster movie collectible vendors. Admission is $25 a day or $60 for the whole weekend of entertainment. Discounts available in advance online at monsterbash.us or creepyclassics.com. It's Monster Bash, October 13th through the 15th, 2023, at the Pittsburgh Marriott North in Cranberry Township, Pennsylvania. Don't scare miss it.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the newest episode of the Diecast Movie Podcast, where we do movie discussions where normally the genre of the movie is decided by the roll of a die, and also we do interviews, but today we're breaking the mold. We didn't roll the die, and I have somebody who I interviewed before coming back, Linda Jo Miller, who if you go back to episode 45, you know, you can go back to hear her full interview, and she's going to be coming to Monster Bash soon, and I asked Linda, I said, to help prepare everybody that's coming to Monster Bash and know that you're coming, what movie do you want to pick? And being that she's big because King Kong Escapes, King Kong is her guy, I thought she was going to go with some kind of King Kong movie. She totally threw me for a curveball when she picked Godzilla, King of the Monsters from 1956. So I'm still shocked. But Linda, welcome back to the show. Thank you for coming back on again.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Stephen.
I really enjoyed that interview. And for people that don't know, but you're going to be at Monster Bash October 13th for the 15th, yes. 2023 yes. In Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. This is your second time coming to Monster Bash, if I remember correctly.
I think, yes, you're right. The first time, I think, was in 2018 or 19. No, it was 18. 2018. And the reason, I enjoyed myself, but one of the reasons I like this particular convention is that I'm from Pennsylvania. I was born in Pennsylvania, and my cousin lives in Cranberry right up the road. So it's just, as a military brat, I had no real roots. So Pennsylvania is kind of where I didn't grow up, but it's like my roots. So I always enjoy going back to Pennsylvania. And my mom was born in Homestead, which is around Pittsburgh. So it just has a special feeling.
That is special. I was born north of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, near Lake Erie, in a little town called Edinburgh. Oh. I was born in Erie. By my first few years, I grew up in Edinburgh. Okay. So kind of, we're all going back to our home state.
Well, my family's from Cambridge Springs, and I've got cousins that live in Edinburgh. And so, I mean, it's like, wow. My dad graduated from high school in Cambridge. And do you remember the old hotel in Cambridge Springs?
No, because we moved when I was like 5 years old. So I grew up in Baltimore the rest of the time, but we'd go back every summer for a while there to revisit all the friends and family. And I still have family up there and that kind of stuff. So it is nice when you get a chance to go back to the hometown. And actually, I'm talking to you, it's been a long time since I've gone back to Edinburgh. So I might have to make a point the next year or two to go back up there and just revisit the old place. I'm sure nothing's going to look the same.
No, nothing ever does.
I never knew that. Wow, this is a small world. We're all basically heading home. Everybody that's a monster kid, your home is Monster Bash. Everybody is an honorary Pennsylvanian during Monster Bash.
So that's interesting.
that is, and you're going to be there, obviously for the 3 days, and I know they're going to have a Q&A and stuff like that that's going on. I'm so excited to be able to meet you because, like I said to you prior to us recording, I got to interview you a few years ago, and we've never had a chance to meet, and we're going to finally be able to meet there. And all I've ever heard people say, oh, Linda Miller, she's wonderful. I just interviewed Tony Isabella. His interview came out recently, and he goes, oh, I know Linda Miller because I go to the Godzilla convention. She's wonderful.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. Because the reason I say that is because going to conventions, I sometimes hear other people talk about other guests that are not so wonderful to the fans. And I don't get it, you know. I don't get why they wouldn't be wonderful because the fans are the reason that they're there, you know. So I enjoy probably as much or more than the fans. I enjoy going to the conventions and meeting the people and hearing their stories about, oh, you were my first crush when I was like 8 years old. And boy, does that make me feel old. But it's so cute. It's so cute, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, everybody's watching these shows growing up as a kid. And and for listeners to get more information about Linda and I, we did talk a lot about King Kong Escapes, the Green Slime, not growing up in Japan, but working in Japan and things like that. In that interview. So if you want to learn more about it, episode 45 is the place to go. Or better yet, go to Monster Bash and you can ask her directly.
Absolutely. Yes. And I hope people will come out, you know, because in the Q&A session, I always like, it's interesting to me to hear the things that are interesting to the fans. There's always, you know, that thread, that common thread, the same questions. But sometimes somebody will throw me a loop and ask me something I was completely not prepared for. And I like that a lot.
Yeah, because I know during our interview, we also talked about how you were, and just to give people a tease, one of your jobs, I think, working in Japan, a lot of students knew you because of your TV or was it radio work? I'm trying to remember.
It was TV, and it was called Hyakumani no Ego, which means English for Millions. And it was on NHK TV, and there was the professor who was Eurasian, he's Japanese and English, and then there was a Japanese young lady, and then there was me, the English speaking. And so they pumped that into the junior high school, and that was like their English lesson of the day. It was usually like about a half hour.
Yeah, so you were like a local celebrity in Japan before you became an international celebrity of King Kong Escape. So people want to know more about you. We cover all that in the interview, and it's pretty cool, some of the stuff that you have done and are still doing. But you picked Godzilla. I'm still shocked. And when to give listeners, the only prerequisite I gave to Linda, because we didn't roll the dice, was that we are going to Monster Bash. You know, maybe you might want to pick a King Kong movie, or I was thinking you might want to pick King Kong versus Godzilla, because your guy beats my guy, and, you know, just to get revenge because of the more recent movie where the rules switched. But I enjoy both movies, and I enjoy both these giant behemoths, and it's not often you get to talk to somebody that got to work with one of the biggest leading men in film history.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. I'm very, very, very lucky. Very fortunate. I was at the right place at the right time. And, you know, only in hindsight do I understand what I experienced, you know, and how incredibly fortunate I was, especially since they're all gone now, you know.
It is sad when these things happen, and
it's
part of life, sadly. And you and I talked about this, I think, before, and it was just it's just you wish people could live forever, but at least with films and different things, they are there forever in that in that period of time. They always will be the same, and that's the the beauty of people doing films like yourself. And being there, you're there for better or worse. You are there forever.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I'll be gone hundreds of years, and there'll still be film, you know.
And there'll still be King Kong Escapes with Doctor Who.
That's right. Yeah.
But we're here to talk about Godzilla, King of the Monsters. Now, not the 1956 American version with Raymond Burr. Linda, why did you pick Godzilla, King of the Monsters? I am curious.
I don't have an answer, but as I watched it, I thought, and I don't know if this is true, but I thought, I wonder if this was the first time they had an American actor in a Japanese film. Now, I don't know if that's the case, but for some reason, I just wanted to watch Raymond Burr. Because he, you know, Perry Mason growing up, you know, and I thought Raymond Burr and Godzilla, somehow the two didn't quite mesh with me, you know. But I was amazed when I watched it at looking at Tokyo in 1956. It was even so different than when I was there, you know, 9 years later in 65. And it just was so different. It looked very much, not a, like a third world country, but it just wasn't sophisticated looking, you know? Mm-hmm. And it just kind of blew my mind when I saw that. And then I thought, okay, so that was 56. I got there in 65. And then I went back in 2016. I would not have recognized it. It looked like New York City, you know? And so if you compare 56 to 2016. Oh my gosh, what a difference. What a difference.
It is me. And I grew up watching Godzilla movies, you know, Monster Kid, watching monster movies. Giant monsters were my favorites. King Kong, Godzilla. Of course, there's way more Godzilla movies than King Kong movies. So you got to see a variety.
Yes, there are.
And Raymond Burr was a staple because, you know, Godzilla, King of the Monsters. This was before American audiences knew about Gojira, so we didn't know about the original Godzilla movie, you know, at that time, which came out two years prior. Because it was like, I think it didn't get released into the world from after, you know, outside of Japan until 2004, something like 50 years afterwards. And it's two totally different movies, and King of the Monsters, they edited a lot of the scenes that you see that do not involve all the scenes that do not involve Raymond Burr are taken from Gojira, and the plot is different. It's a very, it's a superior movie, but it's a somber movie. It is a movie that really makes you think. This movie is more fun.
Well, it was, I did not grow up with Godzilla. I mean, I just didn't. I never was interested. I didn't even know about Godzilla. And when I was in Japan, I maybe heard the name, but it never was anything that I was into. So when I was in San Francisco in 2021, Bay Area Festival, I think is what it was called, Bob Johnson invited me to come, and they have it in an old-fashioned movie theater. They have multiple movies, and one of them was the original Godzilla, and I had never seen it. So I went in and watched the movie, and I'm getting a message. I went in and watched the movie, and I saw a young Takarada, and it just, it was like a baby in that movie, you know? And I kind of smiled because when I did my movie, I had never done a film before, and you could tell. When I saw Godzilla, I went, oh, this must have been one of his first movies because he has that I'm new to all this look about him, you know. because when I met him, he was, you know, he was seasoned, he was famous, and he had his craft down. So it kind of was made me feel good to see that he also was not as good in that as he was in later years, you know. I mean, he was good, but you could tell he was new to the business. So, Takarada was in there, and Nakajima-san, you know, being in the Godzilla suit. And I didn't realize how fortunate I was to be working with both of those men, even though I didn't actually work with Nakajima. He was in the movie, but he and I never had any contact or whatever. So, anyway, so the reason I just wanted to see Raymond Burr. They wanted to see, and one thing I will say is that I was impressed by his performance, that he took it serious. He was believable. He was invested in it. Whereas I had heard stories when I was in Japan talking to Takarada and them of some of the other Americans that would come over. It was like, all right, I have nothing else going on right now, so I'll do this little movie. But I was impressed with Raymond Burr. He acted the same as if he had been in a big budget Hollywood movie. So that impressed me about him.
Well, the interesting thing I want to make sure you understand is that Gojira was filmed in 1954, and all the Japanese footage that they used was from 54. And all the footage they did from Raymond Burr, I believe they shot in California. He never went to Japan. He was filmed with an American director and stuff like that. So he never was with any of the Japanese actors that were in the Gojira movie. He was with the way they did it. You saw, anytime you saw somebody who's portraying one of the roles from the original movie, you would see them from their backs with a body double. And then when they would go from his perspective, you would see them in the front, and he would have the audio dubbed, you know, so that way it would make sense of what he's saying. And that kind of thing. And I think the director that did that, that combined the two films together, I know a lot of people are going to find this hard to believe. I thought it worked really well, that he was able to take that. Terry Morse was the American director, was able to take it and make it a different movie, but it was able to make it flow where it didn't stand. I mean, yes, you can tell when it's going on, especially when you know and you're looking for it. But for when I was watching it as a child, I never knew that he was not with them, as it seems to be with you, that he was not with them during the film.
The only place I knew it was in the last scene when Sarazawa is taking the oxygen machine, and they're on the boat, and they've lowered Takarada and Sarazawa down. And they cut to some scenes of Raymond Burr looking on. It was like totally obvious that he was not there. Of course, he wasn't there because that was all from 1954, you know. Yeah. And so I had to laugh. I said, wait a minute. Godzilla in 1954 was destroyed. Oh, he's come back, and now we're going to destroy him again the very same way. which was cute, you know. You know, Hollywood, it's not Hollywood, but movie making. You can do anything in a movie.
and that's what I think we love about movies, is that anything can happen. You can end up fighting green slime or have King Kong picking you up and carrying you around. I mean, you.
Boy, isn't that the truth? Yeah. And that is why, because, you know, I have a very vivid imagination. And So sometimes I think in pictures, and that's what I like about film is I don't know, it's fanciful, but you can make it real, make it feel that it's real. You know, I mean, I remember when I saw E.T. and the little boy's on the bicycle and he's flying, E.T.'s in the basket and he's flying up. I thought, man, that would be so much fun to fly like that. You know, so that's what I love movies. You know, we've got here a chain of Regal Cinemas, and I had toyed with the idea of getting their monthly pass, like $23. You can see all the movies that you want. But I work so much, and my mom is elderly, so I try to hang around home as much as I can. But I'd be the perfect candidate, because I go to the movies like 2-3 times a week if I could, you know, because I love film.
Oh, I do too, and I've actually toyed with that same idea, but my schedule with work and other things, it's just like, you know, it's like, when I retire, though, I'm like, I know what I'm going to be getting myself. But, you know, I'll probably get like a year pass and just go gung ho and just be like, I'm going to go see this movie. I enjoyed it. I'm going to go see it again.
I'm like that. If I have a movie that I really like, I will go see it again. You know, so The Ten Commandments is one of my favorite movies. And I will watch that over and over again. And I'll know exactly what's going to happen in the next scene, but I love it. And, you know, at Christmas time, well, what's that movie with Jimmy Stewart?
Oh, It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life. Every Christmas I'll watch it, and it's like you almost even know what the lines are in the film. But the story is so good, you know? So, and this is what, when I was watching this, I watched it. It took me 2 days to get through the whole thing. And at the end, it was so depressing, you know, because I had gone to see Oppenheimer, and my cousin is married to his granddaughter. And I don't hardly ever see my cousin, but I guess name dropping. So anyway, I went and saw Oppenheimer, and I had issues with the film itself, but what came to my mind is when Sarah Salo was talking about, no, we can't let this technology out, you know, destroy the world. That's what I flashed back to the movie Oppenheimer and the conflict that they all had. It's the same thing. I found this movie like I found the original Godzilla of 54. I found it depressing, but I found it depressing because it put a spotlight on, you know, it happened, you know, anyway, it happened. And so, and there's reasons it happened, you know, you can say for, you can say against, but the people that died, you know, I just felt so bad. And yet the people that was killed by them in the war, I felt so bad. So anyway, I just found a correlation between the two movies in that regard, you know. And I have to tell you something. When I was in Japan, it was 20 years after the war. I only had one incident in 2.5 years of anybody bringing up Hiroshima. And that was when I was on a subway. I was on a train with my girlfriend, and this guy got on the train, and he was drunk, and he spotted me, and he brought it up. My girlfriend's Japanese, so I understood the gist of what he was saying, but she explained it to me. And everybody on the train was like embarrassed for me, you know? And so that was the only time I ever had anything like that come up. So I don't know why I'm getting kind of morbid here.
Well, I think you brought up, Ishiro Honda, when he did the 54 Godzilla, which most of this Godzilla is taken from, and you got that motif right then and there, is about the repercussions and about the bombing. Like, should we use these weapons? Should, you know, what is the, can you trust people? Which is the whole to me.
I enjoy
both movies. You know, like I said, the Gojira one I think is superior, but I get so depressed after watching Gojira because it's just, it hits me so emotionally. King of the Monsters, because I saw it when I was younger, I'm able to, I think, because I saw it younger and I'm used to seeing it all the time, I think it bothers me, but not as much as Gojira does. And it looks more like a documentary with the style that they're going for with Raymond Burr being the reporter. Mm-hmm. You feel like you're hearing these news reports and you're seeing this archival footage being put in with it. That's what it felt like. Every time I watched The King of Monsters, did you feel the same way?
Yeah, I did. I did. And it's funny because in my film, there was a story and people were interacting. In this film, it was like a documentary. It was like a reporter saying firsthand view of this is what's happening. This is what's happening. So it became less of a monster movie to me than it did like a documentary. And having lived there at the time that I did, and seeing how Tokyo was depicted in the 54 movie and how I lived in 65 to 68, it was so different. I mean, the Japanese people as a people are incredible. They're so inventive and they can take anything and make it better. Almost, you know, people used to say, oh, the Japanese will copy anything. Well, that's because they can see it. They've got a mind for it. And so the progress that was made from Tokyo 56 to 65 was phenomenal. It's still, the thing I loved about it in 65 is that it still had kind of that old timey traditional Japanese, whereas now it's much more cosmopolitan, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, when I watched the film and even the way the women dressed and the kids in the film, it was older looking than when I was there.
Now, as I say, you brought up already how you got to work with some of the actors, well, one directly in King Kong Escapes, and here you're getting to see him when he's so much younger playing Ogata. And obviously early in his career, because it's like 10 years earlier in your movie with him. And so you could tell, you could see the experience level and the knowledge level, you know, as everybody grows in their craft. What was it like watching him, you know, go through and like acting wise and going through and doing those scenes? I mean, how much enjoyment did it bring? Because I'm just trying to get an idea, like, because you were in Japan for a few years. And I'm just curious, like, how big of a star was he in Japan?
Oh,
like,
you're going to think
him, and then maybe you could probably presuppose back then.
Well, you're going to think I'm one of the stupidest people alive because I did not know when I met him that he was a big star, and I didn't get the hint until we were in maybe halfway through the movie, and I worked all the time. I didn't go to the movies. I didn't have very much free time. And I only had free time after the film. And that was like 6 months before I left Japan. But I worked all the time, so I didn't know who he was. So when I met him, I wasn't like in awe. And it probably was a good thing because I was more relaxed around him, thinking, you know, he's an actor, but not a huge stage actor and singer and dancer and movie star, you know. But as time went on, I found out who he really was. And then I was even more impressed because he didn't put on airs. He didn't act like a movie star. He didn't act entitled or you know, I'm a star and you're not, you know. Because I was very well aware that I was like low man on the totem pole, and he and Rhodes and even Doctor Who and Hamamiya, they were like the stars, you know. And he was just really nice. He was very kind to me, very nice to me. He was married at the time, and we talked about his wife was Miss Universe or something like that, some beauty queen. And Yeah, but I didn't know about Nakajima-san. Of course, Nakajima-san was more famous in the States, I think, than in Japan. He didn't get the respect and the love that he did when he came to America. And the fans just adored him. It's so funny. He and I were in a convention together in Pasadena. And it was like my third convention. And we're sitting side by side, and I've got my poster up behind me. He's got his poster up behind me. We're in this movie together. He had a line, and I didn't have a line, you know. And then I went, oh, I guess he's a big deal here in America, you know. So, but everybody loved him. They just loved him. But anyways.
Well,
I watched the film, I saw Tucker.
I'll say his nickname was his nickname was Mr. Godzilla after all. I mean, it's just, you know.
Yeah. And rightfully so, you know. And, but when I was watching the film, I have a love for Japan. And when I was there, I loved it. I loved it. And so I have wonderful, beautiful, you know, heartwarming memories of my time there. So when I'm watching the film and I see Takara and I see how young he is, and then I, you know, I see Godzilla and I go, oh, there's Nakajima-san, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, he must be really hot in that suit, you know. And it just, it's like, I guess, seeing friends you haven't seen for a long time, you know. And I was so impressed with how, in such a short period of time, Takarada became a really good actor, you know. I did enjoy the movie.
I thought he did an excellent job in this movie, and you can just tell, you know, because you see him in so many other films as his history went on. And one of the things, of course, this is Godzilla's first time, his first appearance, you know, and then being suit acted, and there's such a menace about Godzilla. You know, you just feel this force of nature that comes in. And I thought one of the best things in the film to portray it was when they're on the island and the storm comes in, and you really, and you don't see in this film Godzilla at all, but you feel this force of nature as it's going through. And is it Godzilla? Is it a storm? And then of course they find out later on it was Godzilla, but it's just, I just thought it was such, so powerful, so powerfully shown.
That's true. And Raymond Burr was, okay, he must have been in the States, but it looked to me like he was in Japan. So they did an awesome job, you know, in the scene where he's in the tent with the other guy and the storm goes through. But, you know, I don't know about now, but, it, you know, For centuries, Japanese are kind of superstitious, and so the elements, the earth elements, the wind, the rain, all that kind of stuff, it made sense that would be incorporated, because, you know, Godzilla having the power and of nature, you know, and then it manifesting by the storm and some of the roofs caving in, you know. That was kind of scary in a fun way. I enjoyed being scared.
And this movie does that, because, I mean, there's two versions of Godzilla I look at. There's Godzilla, the monster, the heel, the bad guy. And there's Godzilla, the baby face, the hero. And this is Godzilla, you know, at his... To me, that is some of his most menacing, because I always think the first time you make that appearance, you're setting the template for everything else. And eventually he turns to the side of good. And in subsequent movies, sometimes he's on the side of good. Sometimes he's against. Sometimes he's just his own entity. You know, he's neither good nor evil. And I think really when you get to creatures like this, it's like a shark attack or other things. Is the shark evil? Is Godzilla evil? Or are they just, is King Kong evil? No, none of them are. They're just giant monsters that are living in a world where we're at, and the two species, humans and giant monsters, we're not compatible together for for good survival because the needs are different.
Yeah. Well, and Godzilla's constantly being shot at and bombed at and, you know, trying to destroy him constantly. No wonder he's in a bad mood all the time. I would be too.
Yeah, good man. Every time he steps on these buildings, it's probably like stepping on Legos. He's like, oh, man, they have to keep building this stuff. It's hurting my foot.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, and his tail, my friend has a large dog, and my mom's like 90 pounds. And so when we go to visit, I have to hold on to my mom when the dog comes around because he gets so excited and his tail just swishes and just practically knocks her down. And so in the scenes where he's in Tokyo and he's destroying it, you see his tail, you know, swinging back and forth and everything in its path being destroyed. Reminded me of my friend's dog, Colt.
That is true. And of course, you know, I think anybody that has a pet, especially a big dog or whatever, you get used to those things, yeah, with the tail taking, knocking stuff off and doing those, yeah, kind of things.
Yeah. It's like a whip.
Now, Emiko, you know, the love interest, I just, mm-hmm, when I grew up, when I first saw this movie, I was real young. You know, I was like, you know, like, yeah, under 10. And as a teenager, you grow up, oh, wow, you just can't help but fall in love with Emiko. Yeah. I mean, you're just looking at it. And still, when I was looking at her just the other day when I was rewatching it, I was just like, she is just so beautiful. And it's not often I say that with actresses in movies where you just, but still, maybe it's because it's at such a young age. You look at her, you're just like, for me, I'm just like, wow. I mean, as you are with Takarada, yeah, you know, it's just, I am with her, you know, and it's just like, you know, you just can't help it. You're just like looking at him, you're just like, wow.
You know, she was very typical Japanese, you know. She looked that pureness and sweetness and submissive, not in a negative way, but submissive and like knows her place, knows where she functions, how she can operate. She was very, very pure looking to me, you know, not conniving, not, you know, I think one of the things that I get tired of is how everything is so sexualized in our movies. And so when you see someone like her, that, you know, she looks pure, she looks sweet, she looks decent, you know, I think people respond to that.
The girl next
and
door type of look.
I guess you did as a young boy.
Yeah. Well, I think she had that girl next door wardrobe, attire, yeah, and demeanor where, you know, you just, where it's the Ginger Marianne effect. She was definitely like Marianne, and you know, and of course, yeah, like you said, a lot of movies, a lot of things, people want to depict the stars as ginger, and there's people that love that. Everybody, whatever you're happy with, you know.
That's why they make different movies.
Yes, and they have and more than one person in them, so everybody has somebody to gravitate towards. You know, it's like what they call, like target casting or whatever else. You know, kind of things.
Yeah.
But with this movie, what I find interesting when watching it is I know a lot, there are people I know that say this movie is so cheesy. And I was like, watching it, I don't see the cheese. I don't see the cheese. Do you see any cheese?
I don't either. No. I don't see any cheese at all. It looks like a 1956 Japanese movie. You know, it's not polished in the way that they are nowadays. But I kind of like that, you know. I kind of like without the CGI and all that. But no, I didn't find it cheesy at all. I found it depressing at the end. I was very depressed and made me think and it moved me. It wasn't because the acting was fabulous or, you know, it was because the story was so poignant. And so I didn't find it cheesy one little bit.
And that's the part that throws me off, too, because I'll have people say that. And now, there are some Godzilla movies that are cheesy. There are some King Kong movies that are cheesy. Heck, there's a lot of monster movies out there that are cheesy. I would never think Godzilla King of the Monsters as being cheesy. I think what it is people want to knock it down some because of Gojira, because it's because a lot of it is taken from the 1954 movie. And I think instead of just enjoying both for what they are, some people will knock one to make the other. Like the other one doesn't need, Gojira does not need King of the Monsters to be knocked down to be considered a great movie. You know, they're both really good movies. One great, one's really good, in my opinion.
Well, that's like when my friends never knew I was in the movie King Kong Escapes, and then when it came out, and they'd say, "What? You were in that movie? Let's watch it." And I'd say to them, "Look, watch it for what it is. Enjoy it for what it is. It's not an Academy Award winning movie. You know, it's, you know, just enjoy it for what it is and appreciate it for what it is." And so now I make videos sometimes for church. I'll pick a subject in my head and I'll make a video on it. And, you know, it's very unpolished. It's very unprofessional, but it means a lot to me. And so I'll tell everybody, okay, just enjoy it for what it is, you know. And that's the way I approached this movie, is I enjoyed it for what it was. I didn't have a critical eye, or I just enjoyed it. And it did move me. The end of it did move me. Even the beginning, when it shows in the beginning that he's, you know, been he's been hurt in the attack, it got my attention, because I kind of knew where it was going. I felt I knew where it was going, and it went there, you know. So I enjoyed watching it.
And I know we mentioned his name a few times earlier, but Raymond Burr. I just love Raymond Burr's.
I know.
He could read anything to me. You know, I mean, I grew up just like you did. Perry Mason. You know, this was, I think.
Oh, God, I loved Perry Mason.
And I think this is prior to Perry Mason. And prior to this in his career, he was known to play more of the heavy. And here he is playing a reporter. And he's just, I mean, I don't know how big he normally is, but compared to the rest of the cast, I mean, he looks like he's just giant, you know, walking around.
He looked, you know, even in American films, he looked like a big boy to me, you know. And he has the most incredible eyes. That's what gets me about him, is his look, but his eyes are like just very intense and very expressive. And I remember seeing, I don't know which movies, I remember seeing him as a villain, and he was scary as hell when he was a villain. Believable. But in other things I've seen him where he, you know, Perry Mason and then this, there's something about his eyes that just really came across on film. And you almost couldn't take your eyes off of him.
And a lot of the stuff they're doing that they're editing in, really, it lives or dies on his ability to sell that he's at these different spots, that he's doing these different things. And he has nobody to play off of. I mean, yeah, you have a body double sometimes, but nobody to play off of most of the time.
Yeah. And they did such a good job. I did not realize that he was not in Japan filming until you told me. And that's what I noticed, is that there were no, you know, scenes between two people. It was just basically him. I mean, there were other people around, but it was basically him relaying the story, and like in a documentary fashion. No, I thought he did a great job. Because he could have been cheesy, you know, he could have been cheesy if he wanted to.
He could have. And I think that's what sells the whole movie, this particular movie, for us, you know, because he brings that gravitas to it, the role where this is happening for real, where he's got that look, like when he's recording and Godzilla's coming and he's just like, oh, this is it, you know, and he doesn't know if he's going to make it or not. And you know, that's a scary thing.
Yeah. No, he was really, really good. And now that you spilled the beans and I know now that he wasn't in Japan, I'm thinking back, he really did a good job, you know, and the director and editor did a really good job. The only time I knew it was at the end when they were down with the oxygen depleting.
The oxygen destroyer. The oxygen destroyer.
Destroyer, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. And so that was the only time when everybody else was on the boat and then they were cutting to his reaction. I go, he's not even there. Well, I knew he wasn't there because it was the scene from the 54, but it that stood out to me that it wasn't a really good take. I mean, he was good, but it was obvious he wasn't there.
They just needed to put him in there because really that end scene, he doesn't have to do much. It's just voiceover. It's mostly the what was originally filmed in 54. So you just had to basically set through an establishing shot that way the voiceover narration would fit in. And what did you think of the end, you know, with them going down into the water to drop off the oxygen destroyer and Godzilla and all that? That I mean, yes, it is the very, but that is the movie. I mean, the how they get rid of Godzilla in this movie.
Yeah. Well, since I had seen 54, I knew what was going to happen. And that's why, and when I first started watching this one, and they're talking about Sarazawa, I'm going, well, wait a minute, he's dead, you know. And so you have to suspend reality in that moment. But when they went down, I thought, I wonder how they filmed that. That's what I was thinking. I wonder how they filmed it. I wonder if Takarada really was underwater or, you know, I was getting technical at that point. And so it just was so obvious, even though I knew what was going to happen, it was so obvious that that's what had to happen, is that the scientist had to sacrifice himself for humanity and, you know, and destroy the oxygen destroyer thing, so that no one would duplicate it, you know, and it would be forever gone and the world would be safe because of that, because he sacrificed himself. And then when Godzilla was coming apart and you saw his skeleton, I didn't remember that in 54. I guess that was in 54, but I didn't remember that. And I went, oh, they really do destroy him. So. But because it's the movies, he's going to come back in future episodes, future features. He will come back, you know.
And there's no, if your character is big enough and good enough and people want enough, then there's always a way you can write in a sequel.
Oh, yeah. How many TV shows has some character been killed off, and then next season they explain what really happened, that he really didn't die, and he's now back in the episode. So, yeah, I think that's funny. But when they were going down, into the water, well, first of all, that tank at Toho Studios on the back lot, when I was there, that was a filthy, nasty thing. It, you know, it was a huge, you know, water tank, and the water was, it just didn't look very clean. And so, you know, when they were submerged in it, I thought, oh, those poor actors that had to go down into that water, you know. Yeah. So I was lucky because in my movie, there's a scene where I dive into the ocean. And I was very concerned. I thought, oh, my gosh, are they going to make me do that? And they said they had a double. So I didn't have to dive into the water.
Who knows what diseases you would have probably got or something. You know, who knows what was in that water?
I don't know. Back then, we weren't so so fanatic about keeping germ-free. And so a lot of us have good immune systems because we ate dirt and worms as a kid. You know what I mean?
I drank from a garden hose, you know, because you didn't want to go back inside. Yeah. You just turned the hose on and drank from that and then just continued playing.
I remember drinking from mud puddles, you know, as a little girl. So our immune system was a little bit stronger, I guess.
It could very well be. I think they've done studies where children that have pets when they're babies and growing up are less likely to have certain allergies and ailments because they're exposed to things at a younger age.
Wow.
So there is validity where people have studied where it's, or if you keep people too sanitized, then they get exposed. They have no immunity. Yeah. But if they get
So yeah, it's a good thing having pets when the children are young and letting them play as pets are going to play. You know, they're going to get licked and all that stuff. It actually is beneficial, you know, according to medical studies. But
yeah, but, and evidently that's true.
But one other thing I thought was interesting when Sarazawa was going to sacrifice himself, like you can tell he's going to do it. It's telegraphed early on when he makes that decision to use the oxygen destroyer, and you see him destroying his notes. I thought it was just
burning his papers.
Yes. And his betrothed, who also explained to him that she didn't want, you know, even though it was a prearranged marriage that was going to happen, you know, they were betrothed when they were young. She wanted to go a different route. You know, you talk about a guy getting hit with a lot at one time, you know, emotionally, you know, that kind of stuff. But when you see him destroying and the way she's reacting to it, it just tells you right away, this is a one-way mission. You know, it's like he is not coming back.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and he understood that what he had created would destroy Godzilla and save mankind. And this is where the Oppenheimer thing came to my mind. But what he created in the wrong hands would destroy mankind. So it so he made sure it couldn't be duplicated, and he made sure that he also killed Godzilla and no one else could die, you know. So
yeah, exactly. And
very altruistic.
Very very looking at the needs of the many outweighing the needs of the few or the one, you know, with the sacrifice. Mm-hmm. And I think of all the places Ishiro Honda, you know, so brilliantly set it up, because being that it was in Japan, where anybody would, you know, there would know you can't trust mankind with knowledge that's beyond control, you know, and that kind of stuff. It's just as you said, as you and I both said many times, it's a downer ending, both movies. I mean, you can look at it as a downer ending in many different ways, because Godzilla dies, or I look at it as a downer because it's just you're using this technology and you're seeing the self-sacrifice by other people. There's so many ways it's pulling on you in both movies. So well done. And as you saw with the 54 one, that one even hits you harder with a lot of the motifs, because you're the whole movie as it's going on. And one day I'll do an episode where we'll cover Gojira properly, the first one. But this one, I'm glad you picked it, because I really love this movie because of growing up with it, and it got my love into Godzilla from this movie.
I didn't know that. I picked Godzilla because it would be expected I would pick King Kong. I wanted to do something different, you know. And I've got many friends that I've made through going to conventions, and they're so crazy about Godzilla. So I also wanted to find out what the heck, you know, why are they so in love with Godzilla? And over time, it's taken me a long time, but over time I've seen now the two, you know, first movies, and then I saw Shin Godzilla, I saw Godzilla versus Kong. Oh, and I remember seeing, what was the one with Jessica Lange? I saw that one.
Oh,
I
never King saw Kong, the one with King Kong 1976.
77?
76, I think. It's in the 70s.
76, okay. I saw that one. And, of course, I saw the original with Faye Ray, you know. And so I just wanted to, I just wanted to check it out. Well, I loved Godzilla versus King Kong. I loved that one.
It's to give people a tease with it a little bit. You know, I love that movie too. And I thought it was done proper in a way where Godzilla was still this force of nature. And Kong was the one who was the hero. He is the star of the movie. Godzilla is one of the antagonists, so to speak, but he's a force of nature. And then, of course, eventually they fight each other. But it develops the humanity of Kong. as a character, you know, through the movie, and then how he basically has to fight the unstoppable foe. You know, it's almost like the dream, the impossible dream, and how can he do it? You have to watch the movie to find out if he can.
Well, the relationship between him and Kaylee, I forget, Gia, is that her name in the movie, Gia?
Yes.
Her character's name?
I believe so.
The relationship was, I mean, whoever did the casting was exceptional, because the relationship between her and Kong, the fact that she's deaf and she could communicate with him on a different level, it was, I couldn't get enough of it. I was like, oh, that is so cool. And like I mentioned before we went on the air, my manager is also her manager for conventions. And I was supposed to have gone to Canada to the Northeast Collection Fest or something. You know, anyway, the first convention in Canada, she was going to be there. I was supposed to be there, but my passport didn't come in time. And I was so looking forward to meeting her. And I'm hoping that since we both have the same manager, that he can book us together, because I'm a little bit in awe of her. I know she's grown up now compared to when she made the first film, but I thought the relationship just touched my heart, you know. And I felt like in my movie, Kong and I also had a relationship, but hers was like superior, you know. It just was, I just loved it.
Well, yeah, I think your relationship is like the traditional one with Kong and the leading lady. You know, it's like, oh, it's more in a weird way of adoration or love, where their relationship was like big brother and little sister. You know, or protective uncle and niece, you know, where it's like, I'm going to protect you and nobody's going to do anything to you. So it was, so I think that relationship was shown very well in the movie.
I agree. When I came out of that theater, I was so happy, because I was afraid they were going to have Godzilla beat the crap out of Kong, you know? I mean, they beat the crap out of each other, but I came out and just went, oh, yes, Kong. You know, I, like I said, I had my Kong t-shirt on, and all my friends had their Godzilla t-shirts on. But I really, really liked that movie very much.
I did too. I know there are people out there that don't like certain movies and other things. They want more of this or more of that. But sometimes you just got to enjoy the movie for what it's bringing to you. And if it's everything is exactly what you were hoping it would be or expect it to be, then you're going to be kind of bored with life. You kind of want that surprise. And if it's a surprise that's different but good, then you're happy, you know, and I think that's the great experience with everything in life, let alone films.
That's true. Well, you know how when people just rave about a movie and you go to see it and your expectation is so high and then you're let down. If they hadn't said anything, you would have really enjoyed the movie, you know, because your expectations wouldn't be so unrealistic. But I came out of that movie. I was like, happy girl. I even did a little video. I saw Kong. So I really, really like that movie. I like movies in general, period. Even bad movies, I find redeeming things. Some bad movies.
As long as I'm entertained with a movie, I don't consider it a bad movie. There's movies that I agree with you that are poorly filmed, low budget or whatever. You can look at a lot of things and yeah, it's not a great movie, but I enjoyed it the whole way through. And if I enjoy it, but there have been movies that have cost like hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, so well-funded, and I've just been totally bored or just like disgusted with. And I was just like, oh, this is a terrible movie. You had all this money and this is what you gave me? It's like, ah. Oh. So there are movies I don't like.
Yep, there's a few that I've seen that I don't care for. One time at a convention, my table was right next to a filmmaker who did slasher movies. And he had his little laptop and he was showing his slasher movies. And that's not my thing at all. And so, you know, in his movie, girls were screaming and it I just hated it, you know. So I don't care for those kind of movies. I don't care for a lot of blood and guts, you know. I would rather, you remember the movie, the old movie, Cat People?
Yes, yes.
You never saw the cat people. You just saw the silhouette or the shadow. That was scarier than showing it, you know. So
your imagination I like, usually make things so much worse. And
oh yeah, definitely. And that's why I like this movie with Raymond Burr, is that, you know, even though the production level wasn't like spiffy Hollywood, that the message and the story activated your imagination and your mind. And that's why at the end it was so sad, and it was a bummer, because you were engaged and you felt what the filmmaker was trying to get across, you know. And because it was based on an experience that the Japanese people had, you know, during the war. So I, for that reason, that really moved me.
I agree with you. And I just want to remind listeners that if you want to see Linda Miller, she's going to be October 13th through the 15th, 2023 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania at Monster Bash. If for some reason you're not able to go to Monster Bash, well, luckily we're able to listen to this. You can listen to that interview I did with her back in episode 45. But how can they follow you, Linda, to find out where you're going to be if you're going to be in their area? What's a good, any good sources?
I have a Facebook page. It's called Linda Miller King Kong Escapes. So if you want to, you know, check it out and like it and follow me, I'd appreciate it. Because whenever I do have an upcoming event, like I have Monster Bash, and then 2 weeks after that, I'll be in Atlanta at Monsterama. And then 2 weeks after that, I'll be in New Jersey at, oh, goodness, New Jersey Collector Fest, something
Chiller?
Like that. And
is
then
it Chiller?
In February. No, I wish. I haven't been to Chiller since 19. It's a long story.
Okay.
But no, I haven't. I was there twice. I haven't been back there recently. But I'd love to go again. So, Kevin, if you're listening, I'd love to come and be part of your convention. Yeah.
I want to thank you for picking.
Oh, and then.
I'm sorry.
In February, I will be at Pensacola at Pensacon.
Ooh. That'll be fun.
So that's it. That's it so far.
But I want to thank you for picking Godzilla King of the Monsters and coming on the show again. It's always a privilege for me to have you on the show, and knowing I'll be able to see you soon at Monster Bash.
I know.
It's something
we get
I'm looking
to
forward
finally
to.
Meet in person.
Yes. Yes. I'm looking forward to it. But thanks again.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Anytime, Stephen.
I hope everybody enjoyed that episode. And again, Linda, thank you for helping me out and talking about Godzilla. I know your favorite is King Kong, but thank you for picking that movie. It was a pleasure to rewatch and so on and talk about some of our thoughts about that movie that I really, really, really enjoy, as you guys just heard. If you have any feedback that you want to leave for us, please feel free to email us at diecastmoviepodcast@gmail.com. And also you can leave us a message on our Facebook page. I just want to remind everybody that this is episode 191. We're closing in on 200. So if you have any feedback you want to leave us for the shows that we've done up to that, or say anything about our 200th episode, you might want to send it in now. That way I'll be able to include it in that episode. Otherwise, I think the only way to end this episode appropriately is with a little Blue Oyster Cult. And I think everybody's going to be enjoying it. So I hope everybody has a good day. And again, thanks for listening.